Get a haircut? So firstly, next Monday we will not have a class, next Monday, because the Canadian Math Society meeting will be going on. It starts this Saturday, continues Sunday and Monday. So Monday we will not have a class. As scheduled, our final class is supposed to be next Wednesday, that is the 13th. But let's play it by ear. I mean, if how things go today and on Wednesday, we might want to wrap it up on this Wednesday itself. Because next Monday I can't have a class, and then it's silly to make you all come back for one more class the following Wednesday. So we may try to wrap this up today and on Wednesday. Also, since we've had a break anyway, I want to briefly go to another topic and then come back to the one we were discussing, namely Newton polygons and so on. So. You see, so far we've not openly discussed cryptography so much. It's there in the background, but mostly it's been about a billion varieties. And I explained some of this in the beginning lecture, but I want to remind you about it. So why you're studying. A billion varieties. Finite fields. I mean, there are lots of good reasons for studying them which have nothing to do with cryptography, but I mean, of course, I want to relate it to cryptography. So the idea is to use the group of points. Abelian variety. So let F be a finite field. And A over F an Abelian variety. So the idea is to use the group of points as the basis for a key exchange. So you know that I sort of reviewed this the first time, but I'm sure all of you are aware of this, that if I give you an abelian group or a cyclic group in particular, you can use it as a basis of a Diffie-Hellman key exchange. You're all familiar with that, so I'm not going to review it. And one is always looking for groups on which one can actually use this. I think I've explained to you that you're familiar with what I'm saying, Charlie? Shall I review that? Right now, we look at a finite group, so we look at A of F. We may want to think of A as defined over a bigger field, and then you'd get the bigger set of points. But for cryptographic purposes, you need a finite group. So this point, just to quickly review here, if I have G, a cyclic group, actually it doesn't have to be even cyclic, an abelian group, it doesn't even have to be abelian, a finite group, and let G be an element of it, then, and you have two parties that want to try to communicate, A and B, the protocol that's often discussed is that this part is publicly known. This is public knowledge. And A chooses secretly a number X, secret. And B chooses a secret Y. And A computes G to the X, and B computes G to the Y. And each transmits the other one. So G to the X is now public. G to the Y is now public because it's over an insecure network. And so now A, so after transmission, A knows what? A knows X because it's secret, and it knows G to the Y. So therefore it can compute G to the Y X, which is G to the X Y. Notice, by the way, I didn't assume G is abelian because I'm working in the cyclic subgroup generated by G. And B knows Y and G to the X. So similarly, it can compute G to the X, Y, which is also G to the X. So now both of them know a common piece of information. So that means there's a shared secret. If you have a shared secret, then I can encrypt using that. And I pointed out in a previous lecture the problem with this protocol. This, in practice, this is never used. It's never used because it's insecure. Maybe it's worthwhile repeating this point. This protocol as it stands is obviously insecure. So obviously insecure if given G to the Y, I can compute Y. Right? If this group is such that if you tell me G and G to the Y, I can compute Y in reasonable time, it's obviously insecure. Because then I can guess the other person's secret. And not only guess, I can compute the other person's secret. But even if you can't solve this problem, it's still insecure. So here, you're discussing security for mathematical reasons. Okay? Whether this protocol is secure or not depends on this computational mathematical problem. Okay, this security is a computational basis of security. But the point is that, we haven't discussed this very much this in the program, this term, but there are other aspects to security than computational or mathematical. And it could be just like this, put it, I can force you to tell me your secret. So that has nothing to do with mathematics. And so, exactly. The point is, there's other ways of breaking this without breaking the math. So it's important to know, all of you who want to take your mathematical knowledge of cryptography and apply it in the real world, remember it has limitations. Okay? Your knowledge of this whole field of cryptography is just one part of information security. And if you are actually in a situation where you had to protect information, cryptography is not enough. And in fact, most break-ins occur not by discovering the key, not by by breaking the protocol, but by finding the key in some other way. Like, becoming friends with somebody who knows the key and getting them to reveal it to you. Actually, it's true. Social engineering is something you have to protect against. Pardon?
It's the 1% attack.
Yeah, I'm coming to that. I'm coming to that, the man in the middle attack in a moment. Yeah, but I'm trying to emphasize before I even get there, that mathematical security is only one component of security, of information security. And what he was saying and what I was about to tell you is that, one way of getting this is to pretend, for a third party to pretend to each of the other parties that they have the other one. So here is A trying to communicate with B. A and B, and they're not in physical contact. They're over the internet or some public network. They may be in different countries.
But here is C, who is able to sit in the middle.
Now, A doesn't know when you get an email, actually you have no clue where it's coming from. So they're trying to communicate this thing. The point is C pretends to A that it's B. And C pretends to B that it is A. So see, these guys happily doing their protocol. They choose X, they choose Y. And what happens is when X, when and you compute G to the X, when you try, when A tries to send G to the X to here, C intercepts it. So it captures G to the X. Well, you think now you're still safe because it can't discover X. But it doesn't have to. It now creates a number Z and sends G to the Z. So B has received the kind of information it expects to receive. Pardon? No. Sends G to the Z. No. This is public. G and G are public. It's public knowledge. So it chooses the secret Z and then computes G to the Z and sends it. So B has received what looks like legitimate information. It was expecting, you know, a number of so many bits from A. Well, it's got an email or some other thing over. This is an insecure, whole thing is insecure network, it's a public network. It looks right. So now it goes ahead and computes G to the ZY. So now B will send G to the Y, but again, G to the Y gets trapped here. And C will invent W and send G to the W. So now what's the result of this? That we have here A and C. So A and C know G to the X and G to the W. And B and C know G to the Z and G to the Y. So this part is secure. And this part is secure. But you have now a secure way of communicating secret information to somebody who you don't know anything about, who shouldn't be getting that information. It's like whispering. I often give this thing. You want to tell a secret, so you're going to whisper into somebody's ear. But suddenly the lights go out, and you're trying to find that person who you want to whisper to, and you pick the wrong person, and you whisper into their ear the secret. You gave away the secret to the wrong person. So this is man-in-the-middle attack, or person-in-the-middle attack. You have not broken the discrete log problem. It's as strong as ever. And yet, the transmission is totally insecure. So that's why this is never used in practice. You build in some authentication, some salt, something like that, so that to make it secure. So there are all sorts of variants of this on which one tries to make it secure. So, but it's I'm telling you this because often people have a naive idea that this key exchange makes everything secure over a public network. It doesn't. And again, I repeat, the person did not break the discrete log on that group. Okay. So, but anyway, let's say we've accounted for all that and. Now, the group we're trying to pick is, the second point, I've made it before, but I'll repeat it. So we have to protect against this attack. And that's a protocol issue that I'm not going to deal with. There are people who specialize in protocols, how to make those kind of things secure. But the other thing is, the other point is another point to note is that this problem of if I know this thing is called discrete log because it's kind of computing log. I'm given G to the Y, I'm trying to compute Y. It's like computing log. The other point to note is that the difficulty of discrete log depends on how the group is presented. For example, if I tell you, here's the, I'm going to tell you, describe the group. How am I going to describe it? I'm going to give you a table, I'm going to give you a group, a generator, and I'm going to give you a table of each element and its discrete log. Suppose I, that's the way I presented it, and I make that public, then that group is useless. And I'll also explain to you how it's not enough to say you have a cyclic group or a cyclic group of finite order. Everything depends on how it's presented. Okay. And therefore, one is always looking for groups that arise naturally, especially in algebraic geometry, where you think that maybe the discrete log will be hard. And you look at those groups that arise naturally with some natural presentation. For example, the group of points on an elliptic curve. You have an equation, you have a natural way of representing the points on that curve, elements of that group. And so you hope that, okay, with this group, this presentation, is a discrete log problem hard or easy? That question can be asked. And we're looking at an even more general case of group of points on an abelian variety. And I've illustrated for you the difficulties in abelian varieties, namely you don't have equations, so it's hard to get the explicit presentation. But even before we go there, there are some things to note about what you can do with abelian varieties. So it's known that the order of the group that you're dealing with should be nearly prime. To avoid Chinese remainder theorem type of stuff. Because you see, the point is, if it's not prime, then if it's not prime order, and you can, in reasonable time, factor the group into its components, then you could solve discrete log one component at a time. That idea is there. So therefore, you want it to be nearly of prime order. So therefore, this raises the question of how do we compute the group order? For elliptic curves, a lot of attention has been paid to this question. There is Kolff's algorithm with its modifications by various people that make it possible to compute this quite quickly. Now, in the case of abelian varieties, we know much less, and so I'm going to illustrate for you what, on the other hand, there seems to be more degrees of freedom, so I'm going to illustrate for you something that can be done. Now, there's a generic method of counting the order of any group. So if this group has order n, then its complexity is roughly of order square root of n. And if you didn't use anything more about this than that it was an abstract group, you'd get an algorithm of roughly square root of the order of the group. Okay. So now I'm going to talk a little bit about work of Gaudry and Harley. And and some other people, which I will mention in a moment. Okay, so their idea is the following. I want to compute, let's call it capital N, A of, I think I want to make this, yeah, okay, FQ, let's say. So FQ has Q elements, finite field. I want to compute this thing. So actually, I want to do something. Some part of this I already know. So let's, if you don't mind, I'm going to change this a little bit. We want to compute this. Then we know that there is a polynomial. P sub A of t, the integer coefficients, with the property that P sub A of 1 is this order that we're looking for. And we also know that this thing is a product 1 minus pi I. Yeah, 1 minus pi I. I equals 1 to 2d, where d is the dimension. Okay, so if you were to multiply this out, you would get first q to the d plus 1 minus other terms. And we've indicated before that this other terms is O of q to the d minus a half. So let's set capital N to be this order minus q to the d plus 1. Okay. Take the obvious part that we already know is there out. And our problem is to get hold of N. So what we know about N is we know that this N is bounded by 2D times Q to the D minus a half plus 4 to the D times Q to the D minus 1. And that's just because if you multiply out those pi i's, this comes from the highest order term, and the other terms will have lots of binomial coefficients, which you just estimate trivially like that. Okay. Now, suppose that this order is a prime number. Let's say by some other means we've ascertained or we've constructed this thing. Okay, now by taking a random point, the Q, we have, let's give this order also a name. Let's give this order a name. Let's call it M. We have M times Q, of course, is 0, because that's the group order. But let's observe the following. Suppose let's pick a number L satisfying the following inequalities. I don't want to say, so let L be a positive integer, less than or equal to n, and write n mod L. So n as something plus something else times L. I just chose some number less than it and write n as some multiple of L plus the remainder. Okay, so then the remainder, of course, is less than L. And B is less than what? Remember, this n is this adjusted value of the group order that I'm writing. B is going to be less than this quantity here, 2d q to the d minus a half plus 4 to the d minus 1 divided by L. Okay, so now if we have m times q is 0, so in other words, q to the d plus 1 plus n times q is 0, and n I've written in this way as a plus bl, so that tells me that q to the d plus 1 plus b times l applied to q is minus a times q. Haven't done anything very mysterious so far. But now we're back to this kind of square root approach to solving equations. You see, B goes over that many possible values and A goes over this many possible values. So what you do is you let B range over all those and you compute these multiples. And you let A range over all those and compute these multiples and look for a coincidence in these two tables. So basically you need to find, we'll find n in how many computations? L plus, O of L plus this quantity here, 2d q to the d minus a half plus 4 to the d to the d minus 1 over L computation. So the search part is fast enough that we don't need to count it. So this means, as usual, that if you take your L to optimize this, so if we choose L equals the integer part of the square root of this thing, then we need O of L. So it's like q to the d over 2 minus a quarter. Okay, so for an elliptic curve, you need like O of a q to the quarter operation. It's still exponential. So it's not what you would use in practice. You understand what I mean by polynomial and exponential? I mean polynomial in the log. So polynomial in the number of bits that are involved.
So if I have something which takes O of log q to the 100 steps, that's still polynomial time. If it takes q to the epsilon steps, that's exponential.
Kedlaya. You need to still compute traces of Frobenius on higher cohomology. Yeah. But you see, if you know that, that's equivalent to knowing. It's interesting. That's equivalent to knowing the trace of Frobenius on higher cohomology is equivalent to knowing the characteristic polynomial. Yeah, but I thought you were talking about Kedlaya or that kind of thing. And there is scope for doing interesting work. So whenever you can get an abelian variety for which you have some semi-canonical basis in terms of differential forms or something explicit, then yeah, you have a method. You can do a method. I don't think it's been done in anything more than Jacobians of curves, hyperelliptic for sure, and then some other more general curves. Yeah, but not as a... I think what would be really good is to forget the curve and try to do it intrinsically with the abelian variety. But once you say that, then the problem is to find a kind of abelian variety for which you have a basis of the space of forms. I think a good candidate for that will be to take an abelian variety which you obtain as a quotient of a Jacobian of a modular curve and reduce it mod p. Then you have some hope of looking at the you have an actual lift, it already exists, and you know the basis of the space of differentials in characteristic zero, so you have a chance maybe of doing something. Okay, so you have this. Now next, suppose both weight conjecture?
Yeah. But you need to for high powers of units, you might want to use that. So if you know number of points in a smaller finite system, then you can find it for.
Right.
So you, by whatever method you want, you find the number of the characteristic polynomial of Frobenius. Then you have all that information. Do you mean Weil conjecture, or are you talking about the analog of Koblitz type curves?
I don't know. Just the general.
Okay, so that's one thing. Now, next, suppose. Suppose that. For some small m, for some integer m, we are given n mod m. In other words, suppose for somebody gave you in some way, that some mysterious way, the n that you're trying to compute. Suppose somebody told you, well, I can tell you what it is mod m for some m. How will that help? And how, obviously, it will help. But the question is, how much will it help? So where am I going with this? The idea is that maybe by some means you know the characteristic polynomial mod m. Think of, for example, you're trying to compute, the traces of Frobenius, the characteristic polynomial for an elliptic curve, and you're trying to use the analytic representation. Maybe you reduce the representation mod l. And then you know the trace of Frobenius mod L. Can that help you in the point counting?
And of course it can. Let me see, let's just discuss how much it will help. In this case, so write n as, let's say, n1 plus m times t. So this n1, whatever it is, is some number between 0 and m. And now we have to search. We have to search for t. How big can t be in the interval 0 up to, again, this quantity, 2d q to the d minus a half plus 4 to the d q to the d minus 1 over m. So again, you use this trick of writing it like this, is baby step, giant step. This is called baby step, giant step algorithm because incrementing a by 1 is like taking it's like taking a random walk in the group. Incrementing a by 1 is like taking a small step. Incrementing b by 1 means I've jumped by l, so it's like taking a giant step. So this whole method of finding out a number and then by writing it modulo another number, which is roughly the square root of the number, is called a baby step, giant step approach. So again, here we can use a baby step, giant step to determine t. So with L, with a new L to be defined, you see, before I was writing n mod l, but now I have an extra piece of information, namely I'm already given n1. So now I will only write t mod l. So let's write t as u plus vl, where u is between 0 and l, and v is between 0 and, again, this quantity, 2d q to the d minus a half, 4 to the d to the d minus 1 over l, over ml. So now you've gained this factor m. Okay, so now we're looking for to find t. We have the equation n1 plus m times u applied to q is equal to minus m l v q. So it's the same q that I'm using. N1 plus M times T Q. Actually, I have to be a little careful here. Am I using N correctly? This one says, no, I have a Q to the D plus 1 also, right? From there. You do the same thing. Now you go through different values of u and different values of v until you find a coincidence. But the number of values I have to check, so we need O of L plus this quantity here, 2d q to the d minus a half plus 4 to the d minus 1 over ml. computations to determine U and V. What did we gain by this? You see, we've managed to put an M down here, but now if you optimize, you're going to save 1 over root M. Yeah. Yeah, I just told you that, let's say for example, it happens for example for elliptic curves. For some reason I know I have this big Galois representation that gives the characteristic polynomial everywhere. But for some reason, I know what it is when I reduce modulo prime L. Maybe because I have extra information about the L division points. And then I just need to compute the way the prime P splits in that field, and then I have the thing mod L. Okay. So, what you do is, by this method, you gain a 1 over root M. So, choose now L to be integer part of 2d q to the d minus a half plus 4 to the d q to the d minus 1 over m to the half. Okay, so what you've gained by the previous thing is a 1 over root m. So if you know the characteristic, if you know the number of points mod m, then you can speed up the point counting by a factor of 1 over root m. Okay? So this gives a speed up. By a factor of root m. This was Gaudry and Harley's observation. Okay. Now, a little later on, this was defined as a refinement by Matsuo, Suji, Chow and Suji. So their idea is, well, you got an improvement because you knew the number of points mod m, but twice now I told you when how you get such a thing, it's by knowing the characteristic polynomial mod m. So they said, what if you know the entire characteristic polynomial mod m? Not just the number of points. The number of points is the value of that polynomial at 1. So this speed up is based on knowing the value of that polynomial at 1 mod m. So their idea was, what if I know the whole polynomial mod m? Then what kind of speed up can I get? Suppose one knows is P mod M. Okay, in this case, a little bit more complicated.
to use this information. Okay, so let us write this is a of t as e to the 2d minus s1 e to the 2d minus 1 minus 1 to the d of d e to the d plus minus 1 to the d minus 1 as d minus 1 this polynomial, when you multiply it out, is not any old polynomial. There's a lot of symmetry there, because the roots occur in conjugate pairs, pi I and pi I bar, and the product of pi I and pi I bar is q. So up to the first d terms, it looks like a normal polynomial. These are the symmetry. These are the sum of the roots, sum of the taken two at a time, and so on. But after you cross the midpoint, the coefficients repeat themselves because of symmetry in the roots. But they repeat themselves shifted by a power of q. So at coefficient of t to the d minus 1 is s d minus 1 q. These are the elementary symmetric functions in the roots. Okay, so s d is the sum of the roots taken d at a time. S d minus 1 is the sum of d minus roots taken d minus 1 at a time, and so on. So that, by the way, that's an interesting, those are interesting polynomials. They're called Weil polynomials. This is an example of a Weil polynomial. And they have interesting properties. So polynomials that arise as characteristic polynomials of Frobenius from algebraic geometry all have that shape. Interestingly enough, you can show most such polynomials are irreducible. In other words, if I look at the collection of polynomials with integer coefficients that have this shape, you can estimate the number of those which are reducible. They're of much smaller size than the totality. And secondly, you can ask what's the Galois group of those polynomials. In other words, what's the Galois group of the splitting field of that polynomial? It turns out this polynomial can never have the symmetric group as Galois group. And the reason is because of the symmetry between the roots. Pi I, pi I bar is always q. So that cuts down the Galois group. And generically, so it's just a remark, such polynomials are generically irreducible and have Galois group an extension or a symmetric product, an extension certain extension of the symmetric group on d symbols by z mod 2 to the d. And you can estimate how often that happens. So what happens is if you sort of mod out by that symmetry, you get, quote-unquote mod out, you get a polynomial which looks random of degree d. And so that should have Galois group as d. Now notice these SIs have the following sound. Okay, so now I'm assuming that I'm given this polynomial mod m. So we are assuming that there are integers. All right, that actually we're assuming that we are given integers ri. With SI equal to RI plus M times TI. So RI will be between 0 and M, and TI, well, TI is TI, TI will be bounded by this quantity here, 2DI Q to the I over 2 over M. So assuming you were given the polynomial mod m, right? Assuming we know p sub a of t mod m, so that means we know each of these si's mod m, the ri's are given to us, and our problem is to figure out the ti's. Okay. Okay, so now with L to be determined, write TI So now VD is bounded by 2DD to the D over 2 over ML. So we know the whole polynomial. We can therefore determine number of points if we know the following tuple, t1, t2, up to td minus 1, and ud vd. So now you, without writing down a messy formula for this, you write down this expression, same one we had before, this kind of thing. Only now you, this n is not just n1 plus mt, but you actually express it in terms of the pa of 1 will be an alternating sum involving the sds, and each of these ss
has been written in terms of R's and M's and TI's, and you put all that expression in, and you separate out, you have to separate out the left-hand side and the right-hand side like we did here. When you do that, you find the following fact. We find that there are TI. So TI has that many choices. So there are product T equals 1 to D, 2D plus K times Q to the C. So T1 has Q to the half, T2 has Q, T3 has Q3 over 2, and so on. If you add those up, you're going to get Q to the D, D plus 1 over 4. Divided by m to the d all square root computations. So the let's see, what am I trying to say? These are take this out first. Q to the divided by m to the d. Yeah. So I want to say that this plus l computations to determine this tuple. This one here, which is what I'm looking for. And you just get it from the bounds we've got for T, and then at this last point, we split it up into UD and VD. And UD, this is going to give me the UD, and this is going to give me the rest. Okay, now once again you do what you did before. You try to choose L to optimize that, and you get roughly the square root of that. Sorry? They're unique. Right. So remember at the beginning I assumed the group order is prime and I took a non-zero point. So I have if I have an identity of points, it's got to be unique. If I get A times Q equals B times Q, that means A minus B times Q is zero. So that means A has to, that has to match the order. A minus B has to be the order. I can't have two coincidences because of the assumption that I have a group of prime order. You're right. Without that assumption, there could be collisions. You're right. So again, now choosing L appropriately, choosing L to optimize. You see, what we're getting is we get whatever it is, product 2D, choose K, Q to the D, D plus 1 over 8, this into the half, over into D over 2. Computation. So you save something. On the one hand, the dependence on D is growing.
That's growing exponentially.
On the other hand, you're saving something here in terms of the power of M. And the power of Q is like Q to the d squared over 8. Now the whole group is of size q to the d, and so unless m is large, so the whole group is size q to the d, and so generic method will give you q to the d over 2 steps. So unless d is large, it's not going to help you. Unless m is large, this is not going to help you, because m has to be sufficiently large, like a power of q, to compensate. Here this is going with d squared over 8, that is before you had d over 2. So this m better do something really big for you. So that this work of Matsuo, Chao, and Tsuji was interesting, but it had that that problem with it. Now you can refine this, their calculation a little bit. You see, it sort of jumps out at you. Why did they restrict the baby step, giant step to the last coefficient? They kept all the other coefficients fixed and used the baby step, giant step improvement only on the last coefficient. So the point is, you should be able to do better than that by splitting up each of these into U's and V's. Okay, so you expect more of a square root improvement. It turns out that you have to be a little bit careful in doing that, and that there's an optimal point at which you should stop doing the splitting. So one can refine this. Writing more of the Ti as Ti equals Ui plus Vi times L, instead of just the last one. So again, we can write PA of 1 as q to the d plus 1, and then I'm just going to group terms like this: q to the d minus 1 plus 1. Minus 1 to the I, Si, q to the d minus I plus 1, and then I'm going to just write B, where I is less than or equal to D. So I took that big expression for PAF1, and then I started pairing some terms together. You remember there was a symmetry around D. Okay, so I'm grouping together terms that have the same S in front. But then at a point I stop doing that and just take everything else and call it B. Okay? Q is fixed. Yeah, exactly. I mean, the point is we need to know its value. Well, no. So that's what I was trying to illustrate in the beginning. Initially, the idea was, yes, I just need to know the value at 1 mod m.
and we saw it resulted in a square root m improvement.
But here, you say if I know more things, then I might get a slightly better. And I can show you cases by specializing D to some small cases where this is better.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
It's to say that you know the polynomial mod m means I know the coefficients mod m. So in this case, D is bounded by the following: 2 times D minus I, 2DD times Q to the D minus II plus 1. Sorry, II plus 1. Yes. Sort of straightforward estimations.
Okay, so now what I'm going to assume is I know the polynomial mod m. I'm going to assume that so we suppose given Rj 1 less than equal to j less than d, so that Sj
Rj is between 0 and m, and I also know B mod m, so B is some B1, so suppose given this and B1.
So then we have the following bounds. Tj is bounded by 2D, which is j, j over 2. And T is bounded by 2d minus I 2dd q to the d minus I plus 1 over 2 over m. It doesn't have to divide those bounds by m.
Okay.
And now we're going to write further our T. Okay. Write T as U plus VL, with U less than L. Okay, so then V is bounded by this bound divided by L. So this number B is B1 plus M times T, which is U plus VL,
I'll write that as V1 plus MU plus MVL, of course. And now it follows that to compute this order, we need the tuple T1, T2, up to Ti, B and U.
Okay, because you get the T1 up to Ti will give you the SS up to I, and the V and the U will give you the B. So you again go through this kind of calculation to find out how you choose the L, and repeating the calculation gives us
to the power 4d minus 2 plus I squared minus I over 8 divided by m to the I plus 1 over 2.
Notice that the quadratic term now is in the I. That means where you do this, where you stop the computation, the individual splitting of the SIs, that parameter I is appearing here in the quadratic form. Whereas before, it was D that is appearing as a quadratic term. See, once D appears as a quadratic form, it's hard to beat T squared over 8. But now we have a chance, if we make the I small enough, somewhere in between, that this is still competitive. You see, the 4d over 8 is like root q, is root q. Is q to the d over 2, which is what we got from the old method. So now it's a matter of choosing the I correctly. And I'll give you an example of how this you choose it, where you can beat the previous bounds. So D equals 2, so you have an abelian surface, for example, Jacobian of a hyperelliptic curve of genus 2. So Godrey-Harley gives you O of q to the 3/4 over square root m. Now remember, baby step, giant step, or square root method gives you what? It gives you O of q steps.
Because the group order is q squared. So square root of that would be O of q steps.
The Godrey-Harley method gives you O of q to 3/4 over root m. The Matsuo Chao Tsuji method gives you O of q to the 3/4 over m. I did this correctly. 2 to the 3/4
And I'm suppressing this constant, this B fixed. And the method I've just indicated here gives you gives you the same, actually. Gives you this